Good morning, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, March 7th, the day after Super Tuesday. Most are saying it was a pretty good Super Tuesday for Mitt Romney. We'll talk about what happened in the many states that had primaries, and our guests are joining us from the Capitol Building in Ohio, Columbus, Ohio, where there was a great deal of attention focused on Ohio yesterday, and Mitt Romney just eked out a victory by about 1%, if that holds. We have two guests with us. Bill Cohen, a reporter, State House News Bureau, content provider for Ohio's public radio and television stations. And Bill has been doing news reporting for Ohio's public radio and TV for 40 years now, so he can give us some history here. He's covered many, many public policy issues during that time, of course. Bill, thank you so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
And Herb Weisberg, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at Ohio State University, is also joining us. Professor Weisberg, hi.
Good morning.
Did you both stay up until the wee hours of the morning, or did you call it quits when it looked like Romney was going to hold on to a victory?
I called it quits at the point that Romney was just barely squeaking ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I had to produce reports.
Oh, no.
So I was up till about 2:30 in the morning.
Well, that's kind of a long time. So what do you think? Is it a fair characterization to say it was a pretty good Super Tuesday for Mitt Romney?
Well, certainly winning Ohio in the end after Santorum was so far ahead in the early polls, I think that makes it a very good evening for Romney.
Mm-hmm. Yes, just a week before the election, there was one independent poll that showed Santorum ahead of Romney by 11 points.
Oh, my gosh.
Something like that. And so for Romney to come back was a major accomplishment. Of course, NPR, I think, was reporting that Romney spent something like four times as much. His campaign and the super PAC supporting him spent four times as much as Santorum. So he didn't get a big bang for his buck spending all that money per vote. But it was enough to give him that one percentage point edge here in Ohio.
And tell me how that money played out in terms of radio ads and television ads. Were you bombarded in the state?
We're always bombarded in the state, and we certainly were this time. There were a lot of Romney ads, a few Santorum ads, actually I think more Gingrich ads, and also some from independent groups.
Gingrich ads. Well, that's interesting. Now, Gingrich is, I want to go back to Romney in a moment, but Gingrich took, what's the figure I have here, 14.6% of the vote. If he got out of this race, those votes would go to Santorum, and Santorum would be sailing, don't you think?
That could help Santorum a lot. The question would be for next week's races in Alabama and Mississippi. Gingrich might have more of the southern aspect that would do well in those two primaries, where I don't know yet how Santorum will play in the South.
Mm-hmm. But you raise a very good point here, especially in a state like Ohio. It's kind of moderate to conservative. There have been times we had a contested gubernatorial primary a few years ago in the Republican race, and the somewhat ultra-conservative candidate beat a more moderate Republican. So if the conservatives would coalesce around Santorum, they could, if they had done that here in Ohio, if Gingrich had dropped out and thrown his support to Santorum, for example, yes, Romney could have been in big trouble.
Yeah, I wonder if there's movement, there must be behind the scenes, to get conservatives to coalesce around Santorum, don't you think?
I'm sure there is, and they would also love if Ron Paul would drop out of the race. On the other hand, I think Gingrich and Ron Paul have their own personalities and probably want to stay in it for their own reasons, at least a little longer.
What might those reasons be? Because they like to be on TV?
That could be. I think Gingrich, the question of, it always comes off a little like revenge after Romney's negative ads. And Ron Paul is doing his own libertarian thing, and he's going to keep getting that small vote every state, and he'll have some delegates to go to convention and maybe get a talk on primetime on TV. That's probably what he'd like.
We heard so much after the Florida primary about the phenomenally negative ads that ran in Florida. Were there similar ads in Ohio, or was it a kinder election?
There were certainly negative ads. Romney was portraying Santorum as just another Washington politician going after how, you know, he voted for things just to take one for the team. And it was that type of negative aspect to the ads.
Mm-hmm. Please explain to me, gentlemen, Santorum's rise, because he hasn't. He lost re-election by this huge margin, and now he is this, you know, semi-major contender in a presidential race. How did that happen?
Well, I think those on the right wing of the party are looking for somebody to carry their banner. They want somebody not considered too extreme, that they're way out of the mainstream, but they don't want somebody as moderate as Romney. And so Santorum, there were different stages where, it's going to be Herman Cain. He's going to carry
right.
the banner. No, it's going to be Rick Perry. Let's let him carry the banner. And, you know, as those folks and Gingrich at one point rising and falling, and as those people rose and fell in other states, voters here in Ohio followed that trend and did exactly that same trend. So we had independent polls at one point with Herman Cain winning the primary and Rick Perry winning the primary and Gingrich winning the primary and Romney winning the primary. And as I say, a week out, Santorum headed for a victory in the primary. So I think the conservatives looking for somebody to rally around, and especially the Christian right, they want somebody who's not just working on financial issues. They like they like the religious issues. They like the contraception issue, for example, the anti-abortion stand, that kind of thing. And Rick Santorum, he peaked at just the right time, at least for one of these anti-Romney challengers.
And what about those religious issues? Are those issues that should Mitt Romney get the nomination, he will have to carry on with in his campaign?
I'm sure he will. He clearly was trying to avoid those issues. He would really much rather speak about the economy. That's really his strong point. But he's certainly going to have to be strong on issues like abortion. Hopefully not. He'll certainly hope that doesn't come up a lot in the debates. But on the other hand, he's going to have to appeal to the Republican conservatives just the way he has to on the economy.
But, you know, Romney himself doesn't seem to want to deal with those social moral issues that the Christian right likes. I was at a rally just a week ago here in Columbus. Romney said very little about those kinds of issues. He talked pretty much about the economy and foreign affairs. But leading into his talk, he had the president of Ohio Christian University, kind of a fundamentalist evangelical school south of Columbus. He had that gentleman praise Romney for being on the right side of the pro-life, pro-choice issue, for example. So I think Romney doesn't feel that all that comfortable talking about those issues that the Christian right loves, but he may use a lot of surrogates.
And then you have Newt Gingrich talking about gasoline and $2.50 gasoline for a good 20 minutes last night. We hear that that is going to be an issue that is front and center because the economy seems to be doing a little bit better and it can be derailed by fuel prices. Is that an issue that resonates with a lot of Americans, or is Newt off on some kind of tangent here?
Well, I think it's one of the few things Republicans can talk about right now on the economy, because as you point out, the economy has been improving here in Ohio, this crucial key swing state, bellwether state. We had an unemployment rate 3 years ago, a couple years ago, of something getting close to 11%. But it's been coming down very gradually, very slowly, but very consistently. The last time we saw had a new unemployment rate released, I think it was for January, and it was 7.7%. So Ohioans are feeling generally, gradually, better and better about the economy. And as they do, they feel better and better about Barack Obama. And that's why the latest polls here have shown that Obama would beat any of the Republican challengers. Not much of a margin over Romney, but a somewhat comfortable margin over the others. And that's why these Republicans are looking for another kind of economic issue. They know economic issues are the ones that resonate. They can't really zero in right now, I don't think, on the unemployment rate, although they can always say, well, the rate's not low enough.
Right.
But still, you know, they've got that trend working against them, the lower unemployment rate. And so they're looking for something else. And that is one thing that does get people here in Ohio very upset when they're starting to pay almost $4 a gallon for gasoline. And we have these news reports, well, could it go to $5?
Right, I know.
It's nowhere close to $5. Right. But, you know, it's barely at $4. But people are, you know, these reporters, my profession loves to do these analytical pieces.
Oh, we have a big storm coming in this afternoon. It might be 4 inches. It might be 10 inches. It might be an inch. You never know.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. Tell me more about that unemployment rate. How has it gone down? That's a fairly significant drop.
Well, it is, but it's been over a period of about 2 years.
Uh-huh.
So it hasn't been big drops. There was 14 months. I'm pretty sure there were 14 months where the unemployment rate here dropped by 0.1% each month, something like that. Or it was 9 months or 10 months, 14 months, where it was so imperceptible, you know, but yet, you know, over a year you could say, hey, the rate has dropped a full percentage point. And now it's dropped much more. It's interesting to watch the contortions of political partisans here in Ohio. We have a conservative Republican governor, John Kasich.
Mm-hmm.
So when the economy improves here and the unemployment rate goes down, of course, the Republicans say, well, you can thank John Kasich for that. And the Democrats say, no, you can thank Barack Obama
right.
and the Democrats on the federal level for that. And, of course, you get the exact opposite if things get bad for a month or two. Republicans saying, oh, that's Barack Obama's fault. And the Democrats say, no, that's John Kasich's fault.
Right. Right. Have there been new manufacturing jobs opening up in Ohio, companies coming back from overseas? What's going on?
Yes, manufacturing has been coming back, and that's one big factor. Honda investing more money, the Chevy Cruze going strong up in Lordstown in northeast Ohio now. And so, yes, auto and auto parts. I think Ohio is number two to Michigan in both of those sectors. But here's where you get this issue playing on the federal level, because Obama and the Democrats can say, you know why Ohio's auto industry is coming back? Because we Democrats saved the auto industry with that bailout.
Right.
You got some Republicans who either came out against it or didn't say much about it when it was happening.
Yeah. Let's look briefly at some of the other states, and then we'll go back to Ohio. Were there any surprises? The commentators last night were a little bit surprised that Santorum won Tennessee.
Well, Tennessee was clearly seen as the other important race. Everybody knew that Romney was going to carry Virginia, given that there were only two candidates there. People were conceding Georgia to Gingrich. But Tennessee was the other one that could have gone either way, that if Romney had a great night, he would have won Tennessee in addition to Ohio, and that would have iced the race for him. But Santorum keeping Tennessee, that keeps Santorum in the race at least a few more weeks.
Were you surprised by the results in Tennessee?
Just mildly. I mean, I think Santorum was ahead in a lot of the polling that had been done there. So he was expected to win. But yet that was the other race that could easily have flipped.
Mm-hmm.
I think what keeps surprising me is how Ron Paul just doesn't win any state. He's the one who, you know, could have won some of the caucus states in particular. One might have expected that. But he's lucky if he even scores a second place choice. Is that North Dakota and Vermont are the only places he even came in second? Well, plus Virginia, given he was the only other candidate in the race there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that was the real surprise, that Paul really isn't catching on, you know, barely in the caucus states.
He seems to be catching on among young people, doesn't he? Because of this,
isn't
bring the troops home.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that interesting? I don't
yes.
know if it's a grandfather effect or what, but he really does, his appeal really is to the young people.
Of course, his libertarian philosophy cuts against the grain of your typical liberal or conservative. If you're a typical Republican conservative, you love what Paul says about, let's get rid of the federal income tax. Let's slash government to the bone. You're cheering. But then when you hear him say, and we're going to bring all these troops home from overseas, we're going to cut the military budget, too. There's the libertarian philosophy of, well, let's legalize drugs and those kinds of things. Well, then you go. Oh, I hate that. I hate that other half of what Ron Paul is talking about. Now, if you're a liberal, a typical liberal Democrat, you go, I love when Ron Paul talks about bringing home those troops from overseas and getting the government out of the bedroom and get the government out of my personal affairs. But then you hate when you hear him say he also wants to get the federal government out of your wallet and get rid of the federal income tax. And boy, then how are we going to have any money for welfare programs and to clean up the environment? And so you're a liberal there, and you go, boy, I hate the other half of Ron Paul. So that's the reason why Paul has he's got this dedicated group of ideological supporters who believe they're being consistent. We just want government out of people's lives and wallets. But for other folks, the traditional voters, liberals and conservatives, they love half of what he says and hate the other half.
So is there anything that, say, Mitt Romney, who people say, people just aren't warming up to him, is there something he can learn from Ron Paul about how you get dedicated vocal supporters?
I really don't think there is, because Ron Paul's secret is his ideological purity, almost theoretical purity here. And that's not what Romney is about, I don't think. I think he sees himself as more of a practical problem solver and moderate on almost all those issues compared to Paul. I mean, does he want to cut the federal government? Yes, but nowhere near as much as Paul wants to.
I just want to ask you, before we start going to phone calls, about the governor of the state. He took a beating in that referendum on collective bargaining. How long ago was that now? A few months ago?
Well, that was that was November.
It was November. Are people warming to him again, or is he struggling in Ohio?
He's still struggling, but people are warming to him very gradually, just as they are warming to Barack Obama. Again, that's the irony of Ohio's gradually improving economic situation and the gradual lowering of the unemployment rate. The latest polls, I think, had John Kasich's popularity at 44% or 46, something like that, just a little below Barack Obama's. But both of them are on a very gradual uptick.
Do you like having all the attention in Ohio? Everybody keeps saying, Ohio, you got to watch Ohio. Whoever wins has got to win Ohio to carry on with the election. You get a lot of attention, don't you?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I have a hard enough time just working on the reports for all the Ohio public radio stations, let alone talking to other folks. But it's kind of fun to tell people outside of Ohio what we're about. I think people on the East Coast, if you ask people on the East Coast or West Coast, where's Ohio, they'd probably say, oh, it's right smack in the middle of the country. And of course, and it's all a bunch of cornfields and conservative Republicans. And we're really a much more moderate swing state than that, and we're really pretty darn close to the East Coast, really, a couple states away. And we do have cornfields, but we've got a lot of manufacturing, and so we're a very diverse state. But we're a bellwether state. We are a very representative state of the whole country, and that's why, we've got this old rule or history. No Republican has ever won the White House without winning Ohio,
right.
And I think only twice have the Democrats won the White House without winning Ohio. So it's basically a must-win state for both parties.
Yeah. We have to teach those East Coast people a lesson, don't we? We got the same problem here in Milwaukee. Oh, yeah, Milwaukee, Minnesota? No, excuse me. How could you even say that? Let's welcome phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. I'm sorry, I didn't give you the line number earlier on, but our lines are open, and we're talking about Super Tuesday. I'm sure that many of you who follow politics pretty avidly watched a great deal of the coverage, listened to the coverage last night, and have some things to say about it being a pretty good Super Tuesday for Mitt Romney. I don't think there were a whole lot of surprises there. Some are saying that it was not surprising that the margin in Ohio was very close. That's what the polling had projected ahead of time. What about Rick Santorum winning in Tennessee? What about Newt Gingrich? I am looking at those numbers and wondering why he stays in the race, because he's not winning very much either. We have some avid Ron Paul supporters, I know, who call in here frequently, and he hasn't been winning any states. Is it good for him to stay in the race? Would everything change if conservatives coalesced around Rick Santorum. And why is he so prominent? And what, I have 50 million questions. What about the gradually improving economy? Is it looking better and better for the president right now? Or what issues should the Republicans be addressing that would make this a pretty tough battle for the White House? Or maybe you think it will be anyhow. So let's go to you. Our phone lines are now filled. You can use the email address to talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Our guests are joining us from the Capitol Building in Columbus, Ohio, where they have paid very careful attention. Bill Cohen, reporter, State House News Bureau, was up until the wee hours of the morning looking at the Ohio race and doing reports on it, content provider for Ohio's public radio and television station. Herb Weisberg, professor emeritus of political science at Ohio State University, is also with us. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our show today. I don't know if you saw that CBS 60 Minutes report on antidepressants a couple weeks ago. It really caught my attention, and Rhonda has tracked down a couple guests who will answer the question, do antidepressants work? One of our guests will say not quickly enough, and another will say they just don't work at all. That if you give somebody a placebo, it has the same kind of effect, which is a pretty dramatic thing to say, considering the number of people who are taking antidepressants. That's hour two. Let's go to phone calls. Alan in Appleton. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was curious as far as how the economy in Ohio is doing. Considering when you look at the cities in Ohio, there's a lot. What I noticed, there's a lot of big cities, and from what I've seen, most of what built America was actually built in Ohio. When you look at machine tools and a lot of that stuff, all that stuff came from like Dayton and Toledo, and I was wondering if that's starting to come back because where it is going from now that we don't have a whole lot of that manufacturing in the country anymore. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Well, you're right about it disappearing a lot. The steel mills in Youngstown and so forth, glass up in Toledo, I think, was having big problems. But again, the auto manufacturing is coming back, so that's helping a lot of the auto parts suppliers. And we've got one other possible golden egg here in Ohio. We've got this shale underneath the eastern part of Ohio, Utica Shale. It has natural gas trapped inside. Before, they weren't able to get that gas out. But they've got this new technique called horizontal fracking, where they pump water down at real high pressure along with some chemicals and salt, and it busts open the shale, and it releases the natural gas. Well, Ohio thinks that we are on the cusp of a huge shale drilling boom. And that's mostly in eastern Ohio, southern Ohio, where the economy has really been depressed. And so we are figuring that this is going to bring in a lot more money in taxes. It's going to create tens of thousands of jobs. That's the promise. Of course, environmentalists are worried that it could cause a lot of pollution. And so they want tighter controls. And the other side argues, no, don't do that. You're going to mess up a burgeoning industry here. We just had a report recently that there's a new pipe company, a steel pipe company operating out of Youngstown, and its basic orders now are to make pipe for all these new wells that the frackers are going to be doing.
Oh.
And so that's an example where, Ohio's heavy industry, which had been on the wane, may be coming back, and it may be because of this fracking.
But is that fracking, the environmental concerns, are those pretty much settled, or is that debate raging?
Oh, that debate is raging. We've got Governor John Kasich promising environmentalists and all Ohioans that, the drillers aren't going to have a field day. We're going to put new controls on them. We're going to protect the environment. At the same time, we have jobs and new development. So, of course, the environmentalists say, we can have the development, too, and environmental standards. But, of course, how you define those environmental standards, that's going to be the big key. And we haven't heard from the governor yet on his specific proposal. So that's still to be coming. And then we've got other groups on the left saying, okay, if these drillers are going to make such a mint, let's increase the tax on them. and give it to cities and schools that have had big budget cuts. So we're going to have a raging debate here, not only on the environmental impact of fracking and drilling, but also on the economics of it.
So that will be a focus of the presidential campaign in Ohio?
Well, you might see some of that. I mean, I guess the presidential candidates could be asked, what's your stand on fracking? But I would think, and the federal EPA, for example, is supposed to be coming out in the next year with its study of whether fracking does harm the environment. So I guess in that sense, there could be a federal angle to this, although it seems to me most of the regulation of this industry would be properly done on the state level. That's where most of the regulation is currently done.
Arliss in UP, Michigan. Hi, Arliss.
Hello. I'm very concerned about the Kucinich captor race in the Democrat Party. They're both wonderful Democrats, I think, progressives. And I wonder if you can tell me the outcome of that race.
Well, captor won. And Kucinich was bitter in defeat, saying she didn't play fair in the election. She attacked him too much, and she was using untruths in her ads and so forth. This is a very strangely, if you look at this district on a map, it almost connects Toledo with Cleveland, which that's quite a distance there. It's a long, skinny district. The Republicans redrew the districts to let the Democrats win a few congressional seats by a wide margin, waste all their popular votes, and let the Republicans win a lot more districts by smaller margins. And so the Republicans drew this real skinny district between Toledo and Cleveland, threw Captor and Kucinich into the same district. And, of course, so one of them had to lose. It's a sure shot now that Captor will win the November election. But that what it probably means overall here in Ohio is that we're going to have 16 congressional seats down from 18, and probably the Democrats are going to win only four.
Mm.
So four Democrats, 12 Republicans, in a state that's pretty much split 50-50 between Republicans and Democrats. Herb reminds me here, we're going to have an interesting Republican candidate taking on Captor, but it'll be pretty symbolic, but it'll be pretty interesting. Herb, you want to talk about who that is?
Do you remember Joe the Plumber?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yes.
Exactly. He's the one who won the Republican primary.
Oh, it's...
Kucinich has been the conscience of the Congress, in our opinion.
Yeah, Now it's going to be Joe the Plumber taking on Captor for that seat. So it's going to be a fun race, and yet it should be a very Democratic race.
Well, that's depressing.
But, the fact that we're probably going to have four Democrats and 12 Republicans representing Ohio in the U.S. House, that just shows you, even though the state is pretty much a 50-50 state, that shows you the power of the line-drawing process.
Oh,
when
yes.
When you're in control of redistricting and reapportionment for legislative seats,
right.
You can draw lines that makes you use your popular vote very effectively in grabbing the most seats.
Has there been, you're probably aware of what's going on in Wisconsin in that regard, and the legal challenge and the legal response to this. Did anything like that happen in Ohio? Were there legal challenges to redistricting?
You know, I haven't been zeroing in on that myself. I know there was a legal challenge for a while. I think the Democrats may be challenging that.
There was a legal challenge that went up to the state Supreme Court. And they decided to wait till after this election to deal with it, after this November election, which is a strange decision that they didn't really deal with the content of it. The other thing that's happening is there's a couple constitutional amendments being prepared to change the redistricting process. The League of Women Voters has been engaged very actively with other groups in terms of developing one. And now there's a group of legislators, a bipartisan group of legislators in the State House that are coming up with a separate proposal for moving towards more bipartisan reapportionment systems. And we'll have to see if either can pass in constitutional amendment form with the Ohio voters.
Hmm. And there's another angle to this, too. Democrats at one point were saying, you know, if you pass this terrible redistricting plan that's only going to give us 4 out of 16 seats in the U.S. House, you know what we're going to do? We're going to hit the streets just like we did on that labor issue, on the collective bargaining law that unions and Democrats hated. We're going to collect enough petition signatures and force a referendum on this. But the Democrats, I think, were tired, worn out from their fight over collective bargaining. I think they were having a little trouble collecting petition signatures or looking at that idea. And so I think they gave up that idea of a referendum on congressional redistricting. But as Herb points out, there are still other battles to be fought, proposals always floating around here to supposedly take the politics out of congressional redistricting and legislative apportionment.
Yeah.
Ohioans, though, had a chance to vote on just such a plan in 2005, I believe it was. Some liberal groups and some kind of supposedly good government groups, they would call themselves, they put a four-prong proposal on the ballot. One of the prongs was a plan to supposedly take the politics out of redistricting. Voters voted it down 3-1.
Woo! That's something.
Now you can argue, well, people were confused, it was complex and so forth, and it was attached to other issues that went down badly. But boy, when you lose 3-1, that seems like a pretty clear message.
That's a big loss. Now tell me a little bit more, Professor Weisberg, about Joe the plumber. what were his issues? What's he running on?
I assume a really strong working class appeal, but in the Republican Party. So it's a little different from the normal appeal of candidates for that party. But he certainly has name recognition, and he's probably going to add some fun to that race. What can you say?
But of course, he's got all the numbers against him. I mean, if he would think if he got 45%. He would be hailed as brilliant because that district has been, I think, loaded up with Democrats by Republicans to force the Democrats to waste a whole lot of their votes winning just one district.
And what about Kaptur? What's the background there?
Well, I don't know. She's kind of mainstream. Call her a mainstream Democrat with lots of labor support, and you know. Even if it wasn't Marcy Kaptur, even if it was Joe Schmo running on the Democratic side, I think you'd have to say the Democrats going to win that district.
Mm-hmm.
There was one other surprise here, actually, for voting for Congress, and that was over in the 2nd District, is that right, where Gene Schmidt lost on the Republican side to a dentist in the Cincinnati area. And she's been a strong conservative in Congress and occasionally bumped into some ethics issues. But on the other hand, do I have the wrong last name, Bill? But she bumped into some ethics issues, and I think she was absolved of them by the committee. And that was a major upset. Nobody saw that one coming. Everybody realized that the Kaptur-Kucinich race, one of the incumbents would have to lose, but no one thought that there would be a second on the Republican side.
Anything else, Arliss?
Yes. That's most depressing. I'll listen to your next program.
Okay. Oh. Yes. Wait, antidepressants don't work.
Okay. But that is sad to see. I don't like those shenanigans of the districting. It's terrible. Thank you so much for
thanks.
Your explanation.
Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah.
What we have here in Ohio is that when you're in the majority and you're the one pulling the shenanigans, you love it.
Right.
And when you're in the minority and you're the victim, oh, you hate it.
Right.
There's a few supposedly good government folks like the League of Women Voters. They're very consistent in wanting change. But the partisans, they only hate it when they're being messed over by it.
Does anybody have any idea? I don't know the answer to this, of how many states do it differently. They don't do it by party. They do it by other means. Some bipartisan group does redistricting.
Well, more and more states are doing it by bipartisan groups, but it's still not a majority by any means. Mm. Was it Iowa was one of the early ones to do it, where there I think the commission that sets the boundaries don't even know where the sitting congressmen live. They're not supposed to know that. California has moved to a more bipartisan system. I think New Jersey has a system where it's a partisans on each side, a small committee, and then an supposedly independent person in the middle who makes the final choice, voting with one side or the other. So a few states have been doing this, but it's real and maybe a growing trend. It's sort of strange having politicians decide where the districts would be and who can be elected rather than having voters be able to have more of a stake in it,
right,
where you'd expect the stake to be.
We'll take more phone calls in a moment. Our guests are from Ohio, joining us from the Capitol Building in Columbus, where they've been analyzing what's gone on in Ohio in terms of the campaign and in terms of the vote yesterday. It was, of course, Super Tuesday, so we can talk about results in other states as well. Our guests are Professor Herb Weisberg, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at Ohio State University, Bill Cohen, reporter, State House News Bureau, content provider for Ohio's public radio and television stations. Here's our number, 800-486-8655. Lines are open for you right now, 800-486-8655. I wonder how many times I've said that in my life. A lot. And the email is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program this Wednesday, do antidepressants work? We'll have two guests who will answer that. Our guests this hour are looking at Super Tuesday results, and we're welcoming phone calls if you'd like to join this conversation, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Let me ask both of you, and I'm not sure what strategy he needs to change in order to make him more likable than he is, but Nate Silver wrote today that Republican voters have gotten a good long look at Mr. Romney and they find him likable enough and not much more than that. Were his vote total just 3% lower in every state, distributed among the other candidates in some reasonable fashion, he would have lost Ohio and Alaska yesterday and Michigan and Maine in February and would clearly have lost Iowa rather than having tied there, but it wasn't and he didn't. Is it okay? Can he win a matchup with the president by being likable enough? Or does he have some kind of basic problem here and needs to take a Dale Carnegie course or something to make him more likable to voters?
I think that we focus sometimes too much on the candidates themselves when really factors like the economy are what are going to decide this election. In general, look, if the economy is continuing to get better and better, even if slowly, Obama has to be the favored candidate. If, on the other hand, the unemployment numbers stop going down and start to rise a bit just before Election Day, Romney or whoever the Republican nominee is, you'd have to say, boy, they're going to have some momentum. So I know we reporters like to conjecture and analyze about the, you know, all these factors, the likability, the way a guy gives a speech. But I think we sometimes tend to overestimate that.
You agree, Professor Weisberg?
Well, I see Romney is having a couple problems. He doesn't seem to come off as if he connects with the voters fully. I mean, there were people like Bill Clinton who are a natural politician who really like people and people really feel that empathy there, and they don't feel that with Romney. And the second problem is he occasionally goes off script, not a lot, but just enough, you know, to say that he's going to visit his friends, the NASCAR owners,
right,
rather than the, the people in the stands are talking about his wife's two Cadillacs. He stays on the economy most of the time, but when he goes off script, he keeps getting in trouble. And those are his two disadvantages. His great advantage is all the money he has and the willingness to go into truly negative ads. And so that he's pulled down opponent after opponent. He just didn't notice Santorum originally, that Santorum was the nice guy at the far end of the debate platform each time that wasn't being given many questions because he was so far behind in the polls. And Romney never bothered to give negative ads against him until the last couple of weeks when Santorum's really beginning to charge ahead as the last opponent standing. And we'll be curious this fall, assuming Romney's the nominee, how negative his ads against Obama go, and then how Obama responds. If the Democrats will come up with equally negative ads against Romney, or how they handle the ad campaign.
Hey, let's spend a few moments talking about money, because it just flabbergasts me how much money is being spent on these races. I keep thinking of all the uses for this kind of money, and it just going to ads, and somebody's doing okay, I guess, but it's a huge amount of money, and the national campaign is going to be outrageous amounts of money. What do you think about that?
You know who's really profiting from all this? It's the commercial radio and TV stations.
I imagine,
Now, if they could just figure a way to pump some of that money into public radio and TV, I think we'd be a lot better off.
I'm with you.
Yeah, but it is amazing how much money is spent these days. And, of course, but both sides, if some rich guy is working for the Republicans, giving them money, then, the Democrats, oh, this is terrible, billionaires helping them out. But, the Democrats have some of their own millionaires,
sure,
if not billionaires, on their side, and they love raking that money in. So both sides are, if you want to say, guilty of big money. It's very obvious.
I was hearing I'm sorry, go ahead.
To give you some of the figures, the outside groups, including the super PACs, pumped in at least $3.34 million into Ohio in the last 7 days before the election. Oh. And again, we really appreciate that for our economy. The Romney super PAC, Restore Our Future, put in $1.64 million in media buys by itself. And Santorum super PAC, the Red, White, and Blue Fund, it was only $300,000. Which is one thing that really hurt Santorum, how little he could put in versus
right.
the Romney super PAC.
Right.
But, a lot of voters, campaign contributions buy elections, or, spending, campaign spending buys elections. Well, NPR, I think, calculated that Romney outspent Santorum, Romney supporters outspent Santorum supporters 4-1 in Ohio. And did that buy him a huge landslide victory? No, it bought him a one-point victory. So, obviously, the number of votes you get is not necessarily tied with all your campaign spending.
Yeah, but what if it had been reversed? What if Santorum had all the money?
Well, it's a good question. Maybe Santorum then would have won here in Ohio. Probably would have. One thing I want to caution, though, a lot of the on election night, everybody had their eyes glued on Ohio, and they're going to say, "Who's going to win Ohio? Who's going to win Ohio?" As if there was like a winner take all. Well, it is in the general election, but not here in the primary. So whether Romney was going to win by 1 point or Santorum was going to win by 1 point, they're going to split the 63 convention delegates that were up for grabs last night. We don't have an official tally yet from the state GOP, but it looks like probably that Romney's going to maybe win 60% of the delegates or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But Santorum is going to win a chunk, even though he, quote, lost Ohio. One reason he's not going to get close to 50%, though, and will probably get less than 50%, is he had some early paperwork problems. Before he peaked in the polls, his early supporters, who weren't very well organized, failed to do the right paperwork to get his name on the ballot in some of the various congressional district allocations. And so he lost nine delegates out of the 63 right off the bat because he didn't have the right paperwork filed.
Oh, my. When you think about it, and you think about the number of years, the amount of money, the ground operation that Romney has put in place, it's hard to beat that, isn't it?
I think that's right. And I think that's part of what's going on here this year, that Romney really planned for this for so many years. He does have the organization, the money, but the ground organization, as you say. And, well, Santorum, a few weeks ago, nobody was taking him very seriously. He didn't have the ground organization. He didn't have operatives in every state and every congressional district making sure that he would have delegates
right.
to put on the ballot there. And it's really, in the end, a delegates game. I think we often focus on the polls. We often focus on the primaries. But in the end, it's the delegates that matter. When you look at it, Romney still has, I think the morning count so far, and there's still some delegates from last night not allocated yet, but Romney isn't up quite to the third level of what he needs to win the nomination. So there's a lot of delegates left to choose, and yet I assume that he still has the stronger organization in a lot of the states that are left. And if he just keeps winning, picking up some delegates in each state, even if he loses those states, he's going to be in a powerful position by June.
Mm-hmm. He seems, his one of the things that rung true with me when he was giving his address last night was this dogged determination. And he does strike you as a guy who may not have received all the results he wanted, but by golly, he's getting up the next morning and he's going to go at it and work really hard day by day by day by day for months and months. What a process it is, isn't it?
Well, he certainly started the process 4 years ago when he was running for the nomination then. And it's as if he just sort of turned over the next morning after not getting it and began plotting how he would get the nomination in 2012.
My.
I assume if he doesn't win this year that he won't do it for 2016, but who knows? He really does have that dogged determination.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what's next. We're going to the South next, aren't we?
Exactly. We're going to Alabama and Mississippi next week. And we'll see, again, that should be areas where Gingrich, assuming he stays in the race, where he should be doing quite well. But those are the next couple coming up, with some assorted ones along the way. I think Kansas has a caucus this Saturday before Alabama and Mississippi. And then after that comes Missouri. The other big one coming up, March 20th, is Illinois.
Oh.
And that's going to have, as a primary, they'll have a lot of delegates at stake. But those are the biggies in March, as well as Louisiana, the last Saturday in March, mm-hmm. the next to last Saturday.
And Gingrich will resonate more with Southern voters, do you think?
So far, that's the case. I mean, it's hard to say when you've only won two states that he's stringing together pattern, but he's stringing together South Carolina and Georgia, and if he adds Alabama and Mississippi to that, he would have a southern pattern to it. I'll be curious what he would do with that. If it becomes a close contest in the end, I can imagine him wanting to be able to get something in exchange for giving them to Romney or to Santorum at some convention. I'm sure he'd love to have a cabinet seat.
You think that Santorum's moral and social issue agenda would also play pretty strong in the South. We call that the Bible Belt. So it would seem that both Gingrich and Santorum would run pretty strongly down there, and that it would be Romney who would have a tough time. And, of course, religion, whether people want to talk about it or not, that often is an issue people feel strongly about. And I know that some of the Christian evangelicals, maybe not all of them, but some of them view Mormonism as a kind of a cult. They're leery about voting for Romney on that basis.
Well, I think there was a poll of people in Tennessee, and it was borne out what you just said, that Christian evangelicals, 75%, said they had a real problem with Romney's religion.
But some of how the Catholic issue plays out. I think so far, it looks like in the South, well, Santorum and Gingrich are both Catholic, but it seems to be hurting Santorum more because he's a Northern Catholic. Where Gingrich, perhaps because he's a more recent convert, or at least more a Southern Catholic, that doesn't seem to hurt him as much. But religion is playing some role in the primaries. There's no doubt about that. What's ironic in the results so far is I think Romney's winning the Catholic vote up north. It's not Santorum winning it.
I wondered about that. Is it because he is such a conservative Catholic? Because he's talked about this issue of states and birth control that people feel he's too closely aligned with the Pope, or what?
I think Santorum comes from us so strong on the social issue that there's a lot of Catholics out there that are more moderate in their social views, mm-hmm. and so that they are turned off by that. And I think that certainly hurt them in Michigan, certainly hurt them in Ohio. If Santorum had emphasized the social issues a little less, and stayed on the economy more, his blue-collar origins, his
grandparents and so on, who would have done much better in the two Midwestern states, have been so critical the last couple of weeks.
Well, it's been an interesting time, and it continues to be. John, and I hope you had a chance to take a little nap this afternoon.
Thank you. It's a pleasure talking with you, though.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure talking with both of you as well. I hope we can touch base again sometime in the months ahead.
Sounds very good.
Thank you.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Bill Cohen, reporter at State House News Bureau, content provider for Ohio's radio and television stations. Herb Weisberg, professor of political science emeritus, professor at Ohio State University, our guests. Yeah, and they were joining us from the Capitol building in Columbus.
You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are experiencing some technical difficulties with our feed from Milwaukee at this time. The Kathleen Dunn program coming to an end. Coming up this afternoon on Talk of the Nation, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us. That's after 1 o'clock. And then after 2, the challenges of aging in prison. That's on Talk of the Nation this afternoon here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.